Let's start with cultivating our motivation. And since we were contemplating precious human life last week, let's come back to that and to the awareness that we have a precious human life, which isn't just any human life, but one with all the conditions so that we can practice and realize the Dharma. And so to feel great happiness at this opportunity, and knowing that it won't last long, having a strong determination to use it in the wisest way, to really take the essence of our life. And the most worthwhile thing to do is to generate the bodhicitta, the loving, compassionate thought, aspiring for full enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. And so let's generate that intention, that motivation now. And even if it takes a long time to actualize it, that's okay. We're going in a good direction. And every step we take going in that direction will increase our ability to be of benefit to other sentient beings. Thinking about precious human life this week? Yeah? Did you get some experience from it? Yeah? Some feeling that the opportunity that we have is really quite precious and, yeah, and not so easy to come by and not so long lasting. And so this meditation is so important because by having that awareness, then it revs us up so that we want to practice. And it pulls us out of any kind of self-deprecating mind or any kind of depression. And instead, it makes us really, you know, see our fortune and be enthusiastic about practicing the Dharma. And not take our life for granted. That's important. And for those of you who didn't meditate on it this week, last week, there's this coming week. Okay, so we'll continue on the topic of precious human life, but we're moving into the contemplation on the rarity of such a human life according to the difficulty of obtaining the cause. So when we think of the rarity of the precious human life, we can do it from the point of view that it's hard to create the cause for precious human life, or we can do it from the point of view of there's not very many people who have the resultant precious human life, so therefore it's rare. So first we're going to talk about the causes of a precious human life. So before I read the text here, in the Lamrim, when they talk about the causes of the precious human life, they usually list three of them. The first is ethical conduct, because it's through ethical conduct that we create the cause for an upper rebirth. Okay, and then the second is by practicing the six far-reaching practices, because those create the cause, the cooperative conditions that we need in a precious human life. So the ethical conduct gives us a human body, and the other ones, for example, generosity gives us enough wealth so that we aren't starving and we're able to practice. Fortitude or patience gives us a pleasant appearance so that people won't run away from us when we're trying to study and practice. You know, practicing joyous effort gives us the tenacity to really stick to the practice in the future life. Concentration gives us the ability to stabilize the mind, and wisdom, of course, gives us the wisdom to discern the teachings and appreciate the teachings in a future life. So we need the six far-reaching practices because they bring the other cooperative conditions that give us a precious human life. And then the third cause is to have very sincere dedicating prayers directed towards either having a precious human life or for attaining liberation and enlightenment. Because if we dedicate for the definite goodness of liberation and enlightenment, then as a byproduct we have a precious human life. Okay? So in the Lam Rim, when you meditate on this, you start off, and we'll get into it here. If we think about ethical conduct, and we look around us, how many people keep good ethical conduct? Yeah? Just think about it. No? I mean, we're familiar with the 10 non-virtues. Yeah. Do you know anybody who hasn't done any of the 10? You know, maybe it's holiness and a few of our teachers, but you know, killing, stealing, unwise sexual behavior, divisive words or lying, divisive words, harsh words, idle talk, coveting, ill will, wrong views. These things are all over the place, aren't they? Yeah. I mean, I look at my life, like you said, every single one of them I've done, and not just once, but repeatedly. Okay? And even after I've met the Dharma. Yeah. And then we look around to the people that we know, you know, and think about your family members. Okay? People that you love and care about very much. Do they keep perfect ethical discipline whereby they've never done any of the 10? No. What about your friends? Your non-Dharma friends? What did you used to do with all your non-Dharma friends? Create most of the 10, huh? You know, first you get drunk, or you smoke some weed, and then you do the other ones. Yeah? And so if we look around, what's the newspaper full of? You know, people doing the 10 non-virtues. So is it easy to keep good ethical conduct? No. Not very easy. And even if we look at ourselves as Dharma practitioners, you know, is it easy? You know, can we keep our precepts perfectly? Ooh, okay. Let alone Pratimoksha precepts. What about Bodhisattva and Tantric precepts? To keep them well? Sometimes we don't even know what they are. So how can we keep them? Okay, so if you look at it that way, it's hard to create the cause just for ethical conduct, you know, which is one of the three causes. Okay, then if we look at doing the six far-reaching practices, are those easy? You know, is generosity easy? Oh, when other people give me things, it's very easy. But for me to give other people things, my mind always goes through this process of, you know, well, what can I afford and how much do I need to keep for myself before I give something away and da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. And that's the first one. So, you know, what about joyous effort and wisdom and concentration? Concentration, my goodness, mine's like a monkey. Yeah. So that cause is difficult to create. And then what about dedications? You know, when we do manage to create some virtue, what do we usually dedicate it for? May I be happy. May I have everything I want. May I have a long life. Yeah, in my next life, may I be beautiful and rich and famous. Yeah, that's if we even believe in next lives. Sometimes we just dedicate for this life. May I be rich and famous this life. Yeah. So if we look, you know, at even at what we pray for and what we dedicate for, Yeah. When we say, due to this merit, you know, may I soon attain the state of guru, but that's kind of, you know, rote memory, you know, due to this merit, may I soon attain the enlightened state of Guru Buddha. Thank goodness this meditation session is over, that I may be able to liberate all sentient beings. So that's kind of how we dedicate for enlightenment. Yeah. But when we're sick and we want to get well, please may I recover. I want to live a long life. Please, Buddha. You know? And we're very sincere. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's hard, isn't it? If we're honest and we look at the quality of our own practice, it's hard to create the causes for precious human life. And we're Dharma practitioners, so let alone people who don't know anything about the Dharma. And here I think it's very helpful to think about our family members, our old friends, you know, people that we see around. I mean, of course, there's lots of people who do kind things, you know. The sentient beings are very kind, and many sentient beings create virtue. But, you know, if we look at the amount of virtue compared to the amount of non-virtue, then which one's heavier? Okay. So, of course, people are generous, and they're kind, and they do many things to help each other. But then these very same people, they lie, and they cheat on their taxes, and they create factions in the office and gang up against somebody and, you know, sleep around with this person or that person or, you know, plan out their malicious attacks when somebody hurts their feelings. So, you know, it's not easy to really create all the causes that we need to have a precious human life. And so when they say that it's difficult to have this opportunity, and therefore it's important that we use it now, you know, the great masters aren't just kind of, you know, saying it for the heck of it. Because if we really, you know, do some introspection, we'll see that it's actually quite true. Hmm? Yeah? If we think about, you know, virtuous thoughts versus non-virtuous thoughts every day. Yeah? If we were to do that little thing, you know, with what Geshe Ben Kungyal did, he put a pile of one color stones here for good thoughts and another color stones there for bad thoughts, which would we have? You know? Yeah? Do you want people to know what you think about all day? That's scary, isn't it? You know? Can you imagine somebody, Buddha knows what we think about all day? Those nasty thoughts. Okay. So we see that it's not so easy. So now that we have the opportunity, it's important to use it because we're not sure we're going to get it again. We're really not sure. You know, because this life, which is a good life, it's hard to create the causes for precious human life. And then in previous lives, were we able to create enough causes to have a precious human life again? We don't really know, do we? We don't really know. So that's why it's very important to use the opportunity now. Okay, so our author, Namkapal, says, he begins the section by quoting Aryadeva's 400 stanzas, which says, when the majority of human beings are involved in unholy activities, the majority of ordinary people will certainly go to bad rebirths. Yeah? Now, it's not a thought we like thinking about, is it? It's not, especially when there's people that we really care about, to think of them having bad rebirths. But when we look around us, and we just look at the causes that people create, yeah, then we see it's difficult, really difficult. Okay? Even beings with high status, that means born as human beings or in the celestial realms, so even those beings are continually engaged in unwholesome activities, and rarely do they resolve to avoid them in the future. Thus, many of them go to bad rebirths and find it very hard to obtain a birth with high status. Okay, shall we look at the newspaper? All day? You know, what's going on? We just had, you know, this lovely banking crisis, all due to greed. Now we have wars in Iraq and Afghanistan due to hatred. So much killing. Yeah, there's so many scandals from people lying and doing stuff. So we see that, you know, it's hard. It's hard. Okay, so the majority go to bad rebirths. As a guide to the Bodhisattva's way of life, says, so this is Shantideva, if my behavior is like this, I shall not win a human body again. And if this human form is not attained, there will be solely evil and no virtue. So what that means is, with the behavior like we have now, you know, not caring very much for karma, not, you know, considering the effects of our actions, the karma that we create, then it will be difficult to have a precious human life again in the future. And if we don't have a precious human life and we're reborn in the lower realms, then what kind of karma do beings born in the lower realms create? Okay? So we look at our kiddies, for example. Where are they? They ditched class. They're off sleeping in their basket somewhere. Okay, so if we look, you know, what karma do they create? Yeah. Well, they love chasing, you know, flies and wasps and squirrels and chipmunks and mice. Yeah. Yeah. They hiss when they do things. Yeah. I don't know if all that meowing is idle talk or not. I don't think so. But, you know, difficult. And they live in a Dharma environment. Difficult for them to consciously, you know, out of their own intention, generate positive thoughts. So, let alone, you know, being born as an animal. Now, what about being born as a hungry ghost or being born in the hell realms? It's very difficult to create virtuous thoughts. Yeah. Very, very difficult when our mind, even in this life, when our mind's overwhelmed by either clinging and frustration and dissatisfaction, like the hungry ghost, or our mind's overwhelmed by anger and suspicion and pain, like the hell beings, then it's very difficult in those situations. Okay, so if we have a lower rebirth next time, then any thought we may have now for benefiting sentient beings, it's going to be even more difficult having a lower rebirth, because how are we even going to meet the Dharma teachings then? Yeah? Or we meet the Dharma teachings, but in the form of a cat, a mosquito, or something like that. Yeah? So quite difficult. And then what do? So it's very helpful, you know. I know it's not pleasant, but it's extremely helpful to do this meditation and really think, you know, go through the kinds of actions we do and then think, what happens if, you know, in next life I'm have a lower rebirth? What do I do then? You know, and imagine having that kind of life. And how are you going to think? How are you going to create virtue? Will we even know what virtue and non-virtue is if we're born in one of those realms? You know, thank goodness for our parents of this life who taught us something about ethical conduct. If it hadn't been for our parents of this life teaching us, what would we be? You know, much worse than we are now, don't you think? Yeah? So what happens? So really imagine having that kind of rebirth and then say, what's going to happen then? No, and look in the long term. It's a long term effect. How are we ever going to get out of the lower realms? Okay, so it's shocking, it's unpleasant, but it's a productive kind of unpleasant feeling because it wakes us up out of taking things for granted. and it makes us really think about karma in a very deep way and take it seriously and not just, you know, well, it's just a little negativity, or, you know, I'll do something virtuous, mañana a la mañana, you know, tomorrow morning. No, we become much more dedicated and serious about our practice. Okay, but so the friendly letter by Nagarjuna says, for an animal to obtain rebirth as a human being is more difficult than for a blind turtle to put its neck through a hole in a yolk adrift in the great ocean. So make your life meaningful, O King, by practicing the holy teachings. Even more stupid than one who vomits into a bejeweled golden vessel is one who, born as a human being, indulges in unwholesome deeds. Okay, so this thing, you know, how difficult it is for an animal to be born in, you know, to have a precious human life. This example of the turtle, you know, with the yolk, it's right out of the Pali Canon, you know, and so I'm sure it was in the Sanskrit canon as well. But take an, you know, an image. This is, I find it very effective. An image of this huge, vast ocean. So as far as you can see in any direction, there's just water. And even beyond that, more water. Okay? And then there's a golden ring, you know, golden yolk that's about this big. Okay? And it's floating around the surface of the ocean. And there's a big old tortoise who once every 100 years comes up from the bottom of the sea, and he's blind. Okay? So the blind tortoise is like us, you know, blind with ignorance, sentient beings blinded by ignorance. The tortoise at the bottom of the ocean is like so many beings having unfortunate rebirths. The golden yolk is a precious human life, but the whole rest of the ocean is other kinds of upper rebirths. But the tortoise only comes up once every 100 years, not very often. Okay? He can't see the yolk because he's blind. Yeah. The yolk's going here and it's going there, so it's not like it stays in one place, it's going all over the place. The tortoise comes up for a minute and then goes down again. What are the chances of this tortoise putting his head through the yolk? Not much. Not much. Okay? So that's like us, you know, in the lower realms, coming up once every 100 years, the precious, you know, just for an instant having an upper rebirth. And that yolk, floating around, precious human life, you know. And so one time the tortoise comes up. Sometimes he comes up and he's like gazillions of miles away. Sometimes he comes up and he's like 2 inches away from the yolk. But if you miss it, 2 inches is as good as a gazillion miles, because you missed it. And sometimes he comes up and he just hits the edge of the yolk. But his head doesn't go in. And he's down again. Okay? So really think about this kind of analogy and how difficult it is, you know, for that tortoise to get its head through there. And then we really say, wow, am I fortunate? Yeah? I'm so fortunate to have this precious human life. And why is it fortunate to have it? First, because I can use it to prepare for other good human lives in the future. Most importantly, it's useful because I can use it to create the causes for liberation and for full enlightenment. And third, it's useful because I can make it meaningful moment by moment by practicing the thought training teachings. Okay. Moment by moment, we can make our lives meaningful. Okay? So that's why having a precious human life is important. So it gives us that opportunity to for great purpose and great meaning. But it's rare to attain. So really, really spend some time thinking about this and envisioning this. Okay? And then more stupid than one who vomits into a bejeweled golden vessel, okay? So you have a golden vessel from the Habsburg dynasty, you know, some golden vessel, and you vomit into it. You know, most people would think that's kind of dumb. Yeah. But more dumb than that is somebody who uses a precious human life to act in unwholesome ways and create negative karma. Yeah. So if we don't relate to that, we might say, use a modern example. Somebody who got stock at the first time when it goes on the market, very low price, and then it shoots up, and somebody who doesn't sell it at that time, but waits until it's a big financial mess. Okay. More stupid than that is somebody who uses their life to create unwholesome actions. Okay? Okay, then we're moving into the section of contemplation of the rarity of finding such a human life according to the difficulty of obtaining the result. Okay, so now we're looking at it from the side of the result before it was the side of the cause. Okay, so now the result. In general, the beings in the three bad rebirths are many, but those with high status are few. Among those with high status in particular, it is rare to find those who are free from the eight states without leisure. Moreover, even amongst those who have found freedom and opportunity, those who are inclined towards the holy doctrine are as numerous as stars in the daytime. Okay? So they say that the number of beings in the bad migrations are like the number of dust motes. Okay, we have a lot of dust at the Abbey now since they've been digging in the field. Like lots of dust motes. And that's just one small area that we can see. But you think of all the dust, you know, particles in the world. And then precious human life is like the dirt under your fingernails in comparison. Yeah. Okay, so it's hard to have the eight freedoms. It's difficult to have the 10 fortunes. And even if you have some of them, but not all of them, then there's many obstacles to practice. And it's very difficult to find people who really appreciate the Dharma and want to dedicate their lives to the Dharma. And we can even see in our own lives, it's difficult, isn't it, to keep our mind in the Dharma all day long. You know, even when we do retreat, is our mind in the Dharma all day long? No, half the meditation session, it's on lunch. Okay. And the other half, we're, you know, daydreaming about after retreat or thinking about the past or something else. Okay? So it's hard. Okay, so it's like stars in the daytime. So it's very interesting, you know, tomorrow, go out and look in the daytime and look for the stars in the daytime. Yeah? So I find, you know, really contemplating these analogies can be very helpful. Now, how often do we see a star in the daytime? Okay, so that's how often it is, really, that somebody appreciates and is inclined towards the Dharma. Appreciating that precious state of leisure and opportunity that we have found on this occasion is very meaningful and difficult to find. We must find the ways and means to generate the wish to extract its essence. Okay. In a broad sense, extracting the essence means to practice the holy Dharma. Okay, so in a general way, taking the essence of our life means to practice. And remember, last week when I was talking about what practice is, what is practice?
Transforming
the mind. Okay? Transforming the mind, and it begins with abandoning the eight worldly concerns. Okay? This is because we want happiness and dislike suffering. So I think this is important. Why are we practicing the Dharma? Yeah. It's not because we're afraid. It's not because we're trying to be good kids, because otherwise somebody's going to send us to hell. It's not because somebody else is forcing us or pressuring us or coercing us. It's because we want to avoid suffering and have happiness. So it's our own volunteer effort due to this very innate wish for happiness and not suffering. Okay? So that's important, because sometimes our mind, we get a little bit resistant towards the Dharma. Yeah? And sometimes we hear teachings, or sometimes our teacher gives us some advice, and we go, oh, what are you telling me that for? You know? They're just teaching all this stuff about the hell realms because they're trying to frighten us. Yeah, that's why I left the church. I'm not tired of being frightened. Huh? Well, it's very easy, isn't it? Huh? Or my teacher, always pressuring me to do virtue. Why don't they give me some space? Yeah, I want to decide for myself instead of being forced into it. Well, our mind gets like that, doesn't it? Yeah. So we have to, when the mind gets like that, we have to remember we're not doing it to please somebody else out of social pressure or obligation. We're doing it because we want to be happy and avoid suffering. And because by extension, we want other people to be happy and avoid suffering. If any doubt arises about our ability to practice the Dharma, reflect on such external conditions as the presence of spiritual friends of the great vehicle and the opportunities for meeting them, and the internal conditions of possessing this free and fortunate body as a basis. Okay, so sometimes if our mind gets overwhelmed by doubt, like, can I practice the Dharma? Am I going to really get anywhere? No, maybe this is all a bunch of hooey. Huh? Sometimes that thought comes in the mind too. You know? This life is so real. Oh, why should I practice Dharma? It's like up in space, airy fairy kind of stuff. And anyway, I can't do it. So if we have that kind of doubt, or doubt our capability or anything, then we should really think of our fortune of meeting Mahayana teachers, Mahayana spiritual friends. Yeah? And how rare that is. And especially meeting teachers like His Holiness. Now, it's so rare. So, you know, really appreciating that condition. And then also appreciating the internal conditions we have of having this, the precious human life. Okay. So instead of our mind being filled with doubt and resistance and, you know, oh, they're just nagging me to practice Dharma, you know, or having doubt, you know, oh, it's just too hard, you know, wanting to liberate all sentient beings, too difficult. I want them all to liberate me. Yeah, that's better. So, you know, if we have that kind of doubt, then really think of the fortune that we have of meeting Mahayana spiritual teachers and having a precious human life. If you think of postponing your practice until future lives, remember that it is hard to find much leisure, to find such leisure and opportunity again. So if you're thinking, well, you know, Buddhism teaches multiple lifetimes, so this lifetime I'll enjoy, and next lifetime I can practice. Yeah? Sounds good, doesn't it? Yeah? Lots of sense, pleasure, delight. This lifetime, next lifetime I'll practice. Well, then we have to remember how hard it is to have a precious human life next life. You know? If you're assured of a precious human life next lifetime, well, maybe. That's if you really think samsara is fun. Yeah, you can delay it. But, you know, if we really contemplate it, we're going to have a precious human life next time. You know, better not postpone it. Better not. If you think of putting off your practice for some months or years, this is also mistaken, because although death is assured, its time is uncertain. Okay? So again, we have the opportunity to practice Dharma, but we say, you know, there's all these things I have to do now. Notice the language? All these things I have to do now. I have to do. You know, I have to go to work, and I have to go to these weddings and social engagements. And I have to eat bags of chips and popcorn and chocolate cake. And I have to go out with my friends. And I have to work overtime. And I have to, and I have to. We talk in that language of have to all the time, don't we? You know? And as soon as we say we have to, then nobody can question us. Nobody can come up and say, why do you have to? Because we've already said we have to. So those are the sacred words. Aren't they? Aren't they? When we don't want to do something, what we say is, oh, I'm very sorry. That is such a good thing. I'd really like to help you, but I have to do this other thing. Yeah? I have to. As if somebody's sitting there with a gun at our temple saying, I'm going to kill you if you don't do it. Do we have to do all those other things? Yeah. The only thing we have to do is die. It's the only thing in this life we have to do. Everything else is optional. Now you might say, oh, that's ridiculous. Everything else is optional. I have to go to work. I have to do this. I have to do that. If you look at it and open your mind, we don't have to do all those things. We are choosing to do them. And I think if we use that language of I'm choosing to instead of I have to, it's very revealing. It's very revealing. Okay? You hear me talking about, you know, writing a book about the 3,992,415 excuses why we can't practice Dharma, you know? Because I have to do X, Y, and Z. Yeah? But phrase it to, I'm choosing to do it. I'm choosing to go to work. I'm choosing not to go to Dharma class, but to stay home. Yeah? I'm choosing to go to this party. I'm choosing to lie in my business dealings with other people. Yeah. I'm choosing to hang out and watch the television. Huh? Think about it. It's really, it shakes us up inside, doesn't it? When we have to say, I am choosing, because we are choosing. You know, I'm choosing to take my kids to school. You know, if you're a parent. Yeah. And so, if we really use that, then we're putting it back on ourselves to ask ourselves, why am I choosing to do the things I'm choosing to do? And why do I use the language of I have to? I have to. Okay. And so if we're doing things that we resent doing or don't like doing, then we should say, I'm choosing to do it. And then if it's something, you know, that we're doing for the benefit of somebody else, but we don't like doing it, but it's beneficial for somebody else, then to say, I'm choosing to do this, and it may not be pleasant, it may not be what I choose, you know, my liking, but I'm choosing to do it, and so I'll stop complaining. I'll just do it. Okay? Whereas if we live our lives all the time, I have to, then we're always complaining and whining, but we're never really taking responsibility for things. Okay? So try that, you know? I've always wanted to do that, you know, because so many, it's very interesting. Like right before the week-long retreat every year, I get so many emails from people who write to tell me that they can't come. Yeah. Oh, the retreat sounds so good this year, but I can't come because I have to. And I've always thought, I wonder what would happen if I wrote back and say, why do you have to do that? Why don't you just say, I'm choosing to do that? I have to go on vacation with my family. Why don't you say, I'm choosing to go on vacation with my family? No? That's what you want to do, say it. Yeah? Okay? Okay, so although death is assured, its time is uncertain. True, isn't it? Among the ways of taking the essence of this life, familiarizing yourself with the awakening mind, the bodhicitta, is the principal and most excellent practice. Okay? So of all the ways to take the essence of this life, familiarizing our mind with the altruistic intention, with the bodhicitta, with that aspiration to attain full enlightenment for the benefit of sentient beings, that's the principle. That's the most excellent thing. And that's why meeting Mahayana spiritual masters is so precious. Yeah, because they're the ones who show us how to do this. So seeing that, okay, and to do that, you should engage in the, so to attain, to generate bodhicitta, okay, to do that, you should engage in the preliminaries for training in the awakening mind. So he's bringing us back to the four preliminaries for training in the awakening mind, which are, first one, precious human life, second, impermanence and death, third, harmonious effects, fourth, yeah, the disadvantages or misery of cyclic existence. So those are the four preliminaries. Okay. So that was the section on precious human life. Now we're going to move into the section on death and impermanence. And I find this section very, very moving, you know, and we have to be completely knuckleheads not to be moved by this. So if this thing can move me, it can move anybody. Okay? So it's how to think about the brevity of this life, death, and impermanence. Okay? So we should think about how being unmindful of death is the main cause of the whole heap of mistakes performed in this and future lives, and how familiarity with death and impermanence is advantageous, the sole means for achieving everything excellent in this and future lives. That's a pretty strong statement, isn't it? That being unmindful of death is the main cause of the whole heap of mistakes performed in this and future lives. Yeah. Now, why is not being mindful of death the main cause for all the negative karma we create in this and future lives? Okay, why? Okay. When we're not aware of impermanence and death, then we feel like we're going to live forever. Okay? When we're not aware of impermanence and death, we feel like we're this solid person who exists right now, who's always going to exist. You know, this life is just going to continue ad infinitum. And so if we have that feeling of being so permanent, then, you know, thinking about the long-term effects of our actions doesn't enter in our mind, because our mind is just involved with thinking about this life. Because the appearance of this life is so strong, so in our face all the time, and we think it's permanent and real, and it's not going to disappear. So then, let's enjoy. You know, we'll enjoy this life as much as we can through sense pleasure. And when we can't, then we'll get angry because we can't, and we'll take it out on other people. Okay? And then when we're not doing that, then we'll just zone out and sleep or drink or drug or, you know, bury our head in the sand. So there you have the three poisonous attitudes: clinging, attachment, anger, and ignorance. Yeah? And so they all arise moment after moment after moment if we don't remember impermanence and death, because everything seems so real around us and this life feels like it's not going to end. When we think about impermanence and death, then we realize that, hey, wait a minute, you know, this life doesn't last very long. And who I think I am right now is not who I am, and it's not who I'm always going to be. Because like that, I could die and be born in another life. Yeah. So it really kind of shocks us in some way. And especially if we've contemplated precious human life beforehand, you know, then we really have the feeling of the preciousness of this life, and then we don't want to waste it because we know at any moment we could die. And when we die, what we take with us is the karma that we've created. Yeah? Not all of our memories and all of this thing. Yeah? We can chalk up a whole pile of memories, can't we? Yeah? We write diaries full of stuff and all of our scrapbooks and photo albums and medals and trophies and certificates and diplomas and, you know, all these things that illustrate I was alive, you know. Why do we do it? So that when we're old, we can sit there, you know, and our mind that's senile or has Alzheimer's, you know, can look at the picture books, you know, and there's your kids, and you go, oh, who's that? Scary, huh? Or even if we don't have Alzheimer's or senility, you know, and we recognize, you know, oh, I know who those people are, then all we have is, you know, a nice scrapbook to prove that we've been alive, you know, plus our certificates and everything else. Yeah. And then when we die, what's everybody else going to do with it? Yeah. They're going to chuck it, aren't they? Yeah. It's going in the garbage. Yeah. Or maybe you have idea, oh, my kids will hold on to it. So your kids are going to take, you know, your scrapbook from when you were 16 with all the napkins of the boys you dated. I had that scrapbook once upon a time, you know. Yeah. I don't have any kids to take it. Anyway, I threw it out a long time ago after I met the Dharma. But, you know, what's everybody else going to do with all our stuff? You know, we always have this feeling of, you know, I'm so important, so after I die, somebody's going to write my autobiography. No, my biography. Only I can do my autobiography. You know, so somebody's going to write my biography. I'm going to appear, you know, in the annals of, you know, Buddhism in the West. Yeah. Somebody's going to write a book and, you know, we'll get three sentences. Yeah. And if we were to even read it, we'd go, hey, you guys got it all wrong. Why are you saying I did that? I did not do that. I did this. You know, can't you even do your research properly? You know, but that's if, you know, we could see. But where are we going to be after they're slaving away doing all this research? You know? So maybe we think, well, I'll just save it all on my computer file and back it up. And then after I'm dead, you know, I'll will my computer file to somebody to make sure that somebody writes my biography. Okay? And then, you know, there in the computer files, they'll find all my tragedies and my deep emotions. Right? My deep emotions and how awful people treated me while I was trying to develop bodhicitta for them. And then they'll see all of my glimpses into emptiness. You know, because I've recorded each of them, you know, with lots of words and conceptuality. Yeah. And then, you know, they'll go through the Abbey hard drive for all the pictures. You know? And they'll make a whole book about me. Of course, I won't be anywhere around to enjoy it. But never mind, it gives me pleasure thinking that somebody's going to do it in the future. Crazy, isn't it? Totally nutty. Nutty. Okay, where were we? Chapter what of our book? Okay. Yeah, so if we aren't mindful of death, then, you know, this is what we get caught up in, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, and remembrance of impermanence and death is like such a good thing for our practice because it wakes us up, you know? I better practice Dharma because I'm going to die, and I better practice Dharma soon because I don't know how long I'm going to live. And I better practice Dharma purely because when I die, I can't take any of these worldly things with me. All I can take with is the karma I create, you know? So if my Dharma practice is all mixed in with the eight worldly concerns, what kind of karma am I going to create and take with me? So this part here where you're thinking about the advantages of meditating on death and impermanence and the disadvantages of not doing it, that's where the meditation on the eight worldly concerns comes in the long run. Okay? Because a disadvantage of not remembering death is that we just live our life completely caught up with the eight worldly concerns. Okay. And it's so easy to see this, isn't it? You know, first pair of eight worldly concerns, delight at material possessions and money. Yeah? And being displeased when we don't have it or have enough of it. We're all like that, aren't we? Yeah? Then, yeah, feeling delight when we have praise and approval. Yes, more. Sorry, I didn't hear you. Say it again. And feeling so despondent and dejected when people criticize us and don't approve of us. Yeah. And then feeling delighted when we have a good reputation. So when a whole bunch of people are talking, you know, about us. And feeling dejected when they criticize us behind our back and we have a bad reputation. We're all involved in that too. And then feeling delighted when we have nice sense experiences. Yeah, and pleasant things to see, nice music, nice scents and good food and nice physical sensations. And then feeling displeased and unhappy when we have unpleasant sensory experiences. And so we complain. food here isn't any good. Carpet's dirty. You left your dirty socks somewhere in the sink. We're just totally involved, aren't we, with the eight world of concerns? Yeah? And this just takes over our life. Completely takes over our life. Yeah? But when we remember death, then it doesn't. Okay? Because when we remember death, then we set our priorities in a much different way. Okay? Because then our priorities aren't the eight worldly concerns, getting for and abandoning for. Our priorities are, you know, transforming our mind, transforming our heart. The fear of being separated from your body, possessions, and relatives of this life to which you are attached, caused by thinking about death. Okay, so when we're afraid to separate from our body, our possessions, our relatives, when we think about dying, sometimes that fear comes, doesn't it? You know, oh, I won't have this body. Oh, all these people I love, my mother, father, brother, sister, kids, aunt, uncle, you know, cats, dogs, I'm going to be separated from them. You know, our wealth, I'm not going to have this whole place. You know, our reputation, all this stuff, I'm going to be separated. So that feeling of fear and panic that comes when ordinary people think about death, that is not the fear intended here. Okay? So when we're meditating on death, we're not trying to generate that ordinary, panicky, freaked out feeling of we're going to die. Okay, that's not what we're trying to dedicate. Because again, the Buddha didn't need to teach us how to do that. Okay, we can get panicked and frightened of death all by ourselves. So that's not the purpose of this meditation. Okay, that's not the fear intended here. For that is the fear of one who has no understanding of the path. So being freaked out about separating from our body, possessions, friends and relatives, reputation, our whole ego identity, that's the fear of somebody who has no familiarity with the path. And that actually is the fear that most living beings experience when they die, because most of them are not familiar with the path. Yeah? They haven't thought about their death. They haven't thought about separating from these things. They've thought of all of these things as the meaning and purpose of their life. And so separating from them is just so scary. Yeah. But as practitioners, that's not generating that kind of fear isn't the purpose of this meditation. Okay? So what is this about? Everything that is born from a union of parents due to the force of karma and afflictions is bound to die. And although you may fear it, you may fear it, it cannot be avoided. Okay, so we're born under the influence of afflictions and karma. Yeah, we don't like that, but that's the situation. And because we were born that way, then death is very natural. Anything that is born dies. Yeah, death is not a sign of, you know, evil or non-virtue, or, you know, it's not a punishment. It's just a very natural result of being born. So being born under the power of afflictions and karma, then death happens naturally. And although we may fear it, it can't be avoided. Okay, so death can't be avoided. If we fear it and it can't be avoided, then what can we do? Yeah, you can try and live forever, but we can't. Or we can deal with the fear that we have of death. Okay? And so, That's what Milarepa was saying when he said, you know, being afraid of death, I went to the mountains and overcame my fear of death. Okay? So, moreover, until we have accomplished the purpose of our future lives, we will continue to fear death. Okay? Until we have accomplished the purpose of our future lives. Have you ever thought of what the purpose of your future life is? What's the purpose of your future life? Transform our mind. Generate bodhicitta. Okay, we might as well generate that intention for that to be the purpose of our future lives right now. Yeah. Okay, so until we've accomplished that purpose, generated bodhicitta, realized emptiness directly, we'll continue to fear death. If you think about that and realize it, then at the time of death you will have no fear. So if we think about the fact that because we're born under the influence of afflictions and karma, yeah, that then death is a fearful thing, and if we use that to practice the Dharma and generate bodhicitta, then we stop that fear of death. And then when death arrives, there is no fear. Okay? So they say that people who practice well, you know, have first of all, no regret. Yeah? So if you remember death, then when you die, you have no regret because you've used your life in a wise way, and we've created a big store of merit, a big store of virtuous activity or wholesome activity. Okay? So we have no regret. If we remember death, and on a momentary basis throughout our life, you know, asking ourselves, is doing this something that I'll be happy I'll have done at the time of death? And if the answer is yes, doing it, and if the answer is no, then not doing it, then at the time of death we'll have no regret, you know, because we'll make really wise decisions throughout our life. So we might be really mad at somebody and really wanting to tell them off, and then we'll think, you know, at the time I die, is this something I'm going to feel good about having done? No. Okay, well, if I'm not going to feel good about having told this person off when I die, why waste my time now telling them off? Okay? If we're sitting there craving something, craving, 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 I don't know, you know, if you're craving sex or chips or chocolate ice cream or music or, you know, the lying on the beach or being with your friend or relative, you know, craving, 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 and then saying, is this something that, you know, I want to, a mental state that I want to have at the time I die? Or is have even getting this thing going to be important to me at the time I die? No. So why waste my time now craving it? Yeah. And so then the craving in the mind disappears. The mind becomes quite calm again. Yeah. So I find thinking about death and impermanence very, very good. You know, when the mind's stirred up, when it's upset, when it's worried. Because I just have to say, is this a mental state I want to have when I die? Or is getting this thing that I'm obsessing about, or getting away from this thing that I'm obsessing about, is it going to be important to me when I die? No. Oh, let go now. Yeah. On the other hand, if it's some Dharma activity, yeah, or doing something that's beneficial to others, or studying or practicing, you know, is this something I'm going to, at the time I die, that I'm going to be glad that I'll have done? Oh, yes. So then you do it. And then the mind isn't so resistant to doing those things. Because it's like, oh, yeah, you know. If at the point of I die, I look back and see that I spent this time doing prostrations now, I'll be really happy about it. It will have served me well. Okay, so even though I'm tired now, I'd rather go to sleep, doesn't take very long to do the prostrations. At the time of death, I'll feel good about it. Yeah? And so that helps our mind stay with the Dharma. Okay? So actually, as practitioners, when we think about when they talk about the fear of death for a practitioner, the fear of death is we fear dying without having taken the essence of this life. Okay? So we fear dying without having transformed our mind, without having planted seeds of virtue in our mind stream, without having heard teachings, without having contemplated the Lamrim, without having, you know, transformed the mind, made offerings, whatever it is. Okay, meditated on emptiness, generated bodhicitta. So we fear dying without having done that. But that kind of death isn't the panicky fear of death that ordinary people have. Okay? So think about the rarity of getting a precious human life this week, both from the viewpoint of the cause, and how difficult it is to create the cause, and from the viewpoint of the result, how few people have that result. And then also, you know, begin to contemplate impermanence and death, and especially consider the advantages of contemplating impermanence and death, and how it helps clear your mind of so much obsession and rubbish and worry, and it helps us really make wise decisions. Don't you think? Yeah. So think about that, because if we really see the advantages of contemplating impermanence and death, then we'll want to do the meditation. Yeah. And then we'll get the benefits of it. Okay.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual masters be stable, and their divine action spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Lhasa's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase. Idam Guratna Mandala Kamyatayami. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the enlightened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain paradise, you're the source of good and happiness, powerful, content, guest of generosity. May you stay until samsara ends. May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependence arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially at Shravasti Abbey in the West Florida.